Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, the 3rd of September, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
So, Kevin, apparently America is in a recession. Not the kind involving stocks, unemployment, or GDP. We're in a dating recession. Yeah, young people are going on fewer dates, having less sex, and they're entering fewer serious relationships, even though plenty of them say they still want to fall in love. So what happened? Dating apps gave us access to seemingly endless options. I know you haven't been on the apps.
No, I haven't.
You've been married
luckily,
for a while.
I'm
off the apps now, thank God. But apparently people are burnt out. Meeting someone in real life sounds great, but a lot of folks have forgotten how to approach people. And then there's inflation. It costs a lot to date these days. So today on Studio 2, are we forgetting how to date? And with cuffing season approaching, can we fix it? We're going to get, we have like some really cool people coming in. We have a matchmaker. We have someone who's been studying the trends. And we'll hear from a man who actually helps other men glow up. So that they'll, you know, get a lot of hits on the apps and meet someone that they want. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. And this is a safe space. This is really a caller engagement show. Are you or people you know finding it harder to date these days? If so, what is the issue? Money, the apps, finding people you're attracted to, or even getting somebody to commit. Or if it's something else, we'd love to hear from you. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're on YouTube or Facebook, you can leave your comments in the chat. And I'm sure you have friends. You have to counsel some people.
I mean, we've been talking about it all morning, Cherry, just how different things got so quickly, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a really important conversation. And I feel like maybe you're not on the apps either, but your kids are and you're thinking about it. Or you know, you have people in your family, your loved ones who are trying to navigate this and figure this out. It just feels like a whole different world. And it's rapidly evolving. And, you know, I've got young kids. It's like when they get to dating age, am I even going to be able to relate to what they're going through and try to figure all that out? So I'm really looking forward to the conversation you're going to have today.
Yeah. And get your questions in because we're going to have a matchmaker. And like I said, a guy who's like Hitch. He hooks guys up. So again, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And it's Thursday, which means
DJ of the day, Cherry. So, you know, pick a song on the theme. Maybe it's dating. Maybe it's young love. Maybe it's
finding
kids
love.
Today.
I know.
So, you know, pick that song. I'll jump out after this first segment and I'll be the one who picks the selection.
Yeah.
So get your picks in at studio2@whyy.org. Try to get them in by 12:30, and I'll pick a song that we'll play at the end of the show today to take us out.
Yeah, this is a good, I think this is a good topic for DJ of the
totally.
Day. You're going to have a lot
totally.
Of fun sifting through
good
those
ones.
Songs.
Yeah. But first, let's get to our trio of local news stories, Cherry. Story number one, New Jersey is petitioning the Supreme Court to take a case over who regulates prediction markets. So the key question here is for sites like Kalshi, who should be in charge of the regulation? Is it states or is it the federal government? So sites like Kalshi, you might know, allow people to wager on the outcome of all sorts of things. What a politician might say in a speech, what the weather is going to be tomorrow.
Yeah,
but by far the most popular thing that happens there is betting on sports. So New Jersey says there's clear precedent of sports gambling being regulated by states. And the prediction market sites should fall in line with the rules of the states, including New Jersey. Now, Kalshi and others argue they are a nationwide financial exchange and shouldn't be at the whim, essentially, of 50 different state governments. Shout out to NPR's Bobby Allen for the coverage. Now, this appeal by New Jersey to the Supreme Court comes after we got split decisions in recent months by the lower federal courts. In April, the Third Circuit agreed with the prediction markets that the Federal Commodity Futures Trading Commission is the sole regulator. And then last week, the Ninth Circuit disagreed with that and said, no, we agree with the states. And the context here is that, you know, the betting sites, the true sports betting sites like FanDuel and DraftKings are regulated. regulated by the states, provide billions in state taxes.
Billions.
So they see this and say, Kalshi is doing what we're doing, but pretending it's going by a different name, and they don't like it. So if SCOTUS takes the case, arguments could be heard this fall. And former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie was actually interviewed by the Inquirer this week. He was really a force in making sports betting legal, not only in New Jersey, but
sports betting
across the country. Mm-hmm. He's also been a consultant for DraftKings, etc. He thinks the states will prevail here. He thinks it's a, you know, a clear-cut case, but we shall see.
Interesting. So interesting, because Kalshi, Polymarkets, all these, they would bring in billions to the states if they were taxed, right? But it also raises a whole lot of other questions. And these are ethics questions, because today also Spotlight PA did his whole story about, you know, the ethics questions and concerns. And this is becoming a place that's ripe for corruption, right? Because you have who's going to win the governor's race, which state laws will pass. These are all things people are betting on. And think about it, some government insiders
right.
could reap the benefits of this. And so there's a lot of questions around these predictions markets. People don't know, are they sports betting? Are they not? Are they ethical? And we already had that guy. He was a U.S. soldier who was charged with insider trading for using classified information about the Maduro situation. And so we've already seen people abusing this. And so there's a lot of questions around those prediction markets. But then it's also the money.
The money.
The states want their cut.
So we'll see if that ends up before the Supreme Court this term. We'll definitely be following that. We did a full show recently about prediction markets. Maybe it was half a year ago at this point.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. Maybe it's time to revisit.
We will. Yeah. And the second story, the Philadelphia Parking Authority has nabbed 800,000 speeders in the past year since they instituted the speed cameras along Broad Street. Shout out to the Philadelphia Inquirer for this story. In case you didn't know, the city installed 31 speed cameras along the 13-mile stretch of road that is Broad Street. And why? Well, because Route 611 has a speed limit of 25 miles per hour, and people were just ignoring the rules.
They weren't following the rules.
And eventually it made Broad Street one of the most dangerous streets in the city. And so last September, PPA began enforcing the speed limit. They used the cameras and they started issuing citations for anyone going 11 miles or more over the 25 mile per hour limit. And in October alone, they issued more than 212,000 warnings.
Wow.
The good news is by March, the number of citations was down to just 70,000 in that month. Officials report a 67% drop in the number of speeding violations between October and March. So it looks like those little nudges actually worked. And there are those still some hot spots. The speed cameras sit at 15 different intersections of Broad Street. And there are still several intersections where people still speed, like Cecil B. Moore and Broad, or at Chestnut and Broad. But the head of PPA says fewer people speeding means fewer people seriously injured or killed on the roadway. And I will say this, and you know this, people do not like those speed cameras, but speeding is down like 95%, according to reporting. And all of this comes, you know, just a couple of years after Roosevelt Boulevard
right.
had their speed cameras installed, and it drastically reduced speeding there and made it a much safer roadway. And we're going to see more speed cameras come up in you know, corridors where people speed, like on Baltimore Avenue
right.
in West Philly.
That was announced this week as well. Baltimore Avenue is going to be part of a long stretch of Route 13 that even goes into Northeast Philly, includes Frankfort Avenue. And then there's other potential sites on the list, including Columbus Boulevard and others. And yeah, you know, certainly there are people who are not fans of these things and feel like, I don't know. They feels like a police state or something, but they certainly do. They have been effective. I guess
yeah.
you can say that. And as we have the conversation about Vision Zero and not wanting fatality deaths in the city, well, this clearly has made a difference.
It has made a difference. Third story.
Yeah. Third story. Cherry, is the spud a dud? Or is the tater greater?
Hmm.
Well, that's the question about a new $88 baked potato.
$88.
Being offered at the new Center City restaurant, Mr. Edison. It's an upscale eatery. It opened in June at the Bellevue Hotel and pays homage to Thomas Edison,
okay.
who designed the hotel's original lighting. That was a little nugget I did not know before
okay.
today. Very swank-looking spot.
Mm-hmm.
Features an actual Ferris wheel of liquor at the bar, very swank bar with a Ferris wheel flicker going around, and has a menu inspired by like some real classic high-end Philly restaurants, Lebec Finn, Bookbinders, all that.
Mm-hmm.
So the Inquirer's Kiki Arnita went there recently to try this buzzy $88 baked potato, which comes with caviar and
I'm giving it a
crab
side
all gratin, and she left feeling underwhelmed. Now, you can get a $48 version, Cherry. That's a bargain.
Mm-hmm.
It comes without the fish eggs. A simple Irishman raised on basic boy baked potatoes. I'm not surprised that she didn't think she got her money's worth. What do you think?
Yeah,
Cherry?
Well, I don't know. If I'm paying $88 for a potato, I'm going to need my toes to curl. Like, I need full scrunch on all 10 toes.
That's what happens when you eat good food, your toes?
Happen if I'm spending $88 on a potato, you know? And, you know, the caviar, dark, bubbly, moist, I don't know. It didn't look super appetizing to me. And sometimes, you know, stuff that's really expensive to me doesn't always mean good.
I don't know if my toes have ever done anything while I'm eating, Cherry. Is that a thing?
It could be a thing. I would need it to be a thing if I'm spending $88 for a baked potato.
Yes.
But I digress. We're talking about dating today. Why are we in a dating recession? We want to hear your stories. 888-477-9499. We will be right back. This is Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg. Dating has never been easy. Putting yourself out there and being vulnerable is just awkward. But recent polling suggests that these days, folks are having a particularly hard time. A whopping 1/3 of Gen Z say they've never been on a date. And nearly 70% of all singles say they are rarely, if ever, dating. So there you go. What the heck is going on? Why is love so hard to find? And joining us to dive into the trends and talk about how to find love in a so-called romance recession. Ladies, I'm gonna need y'all help. We have Lauren Daddis, a Philadelphia-based matchmaker at 3-Day Rule. Lauren, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
We also have Allie Volpe. She is a correspondent at Vox, writing about mental health, relationships, wellness, money, home life, and work. Allie, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yes. And for you, our listeners at home, on the road, elsewhere, we'd love to hear from you because this is really driven by your story. So we encourage you to call in. Are you or people you know finding it harder to date these days? If so, what is the issue? Money, the apps, finding people you're actually attracted to, or how about getting somebody to commit? Or is it something else? Give us a call, share your story, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTubers, hello, you can leave your comments on the live chat. And so, Allie, I wanted to kind of start with you. So, I want you to give us some numbers, some stats here. Are we really in a dating recession? And if so, how bad is it? Break it down.
Yeah, it appears so. There's some data from the Wheatley Institute out of Brigham Young University, and they found that only about 1 in 3 young people are actively dating. And most of those people are not confident in their dating skills. They're not confident even in the people that they're picking. And a lot of that is driven by a fear of rejection, the cost of dating. And when something does go awry, they're not super resilient. They're kind of turned off by the idea of dating because they don't want to be hurt again.
Wow, that lack of resiliency here. And so what do you think has changed? Can you give us an understanding? Because, you know, have we seen a drastic shift, or was there a pivot point where the numbers sort of tanked? What's the culprit?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of factors at play. I think certainly the rise of online dating, you know, shifted things for people a bit. Like during the pandemic, that's kind of all people were able to do. And then as we've emerged from that, I think there's been a lot of burnout of like the swiping culture of talking to the same kinds of people over and over again, having the same kinds of conversations, feeling very disposable. And then we have economic factors. You know, it's harder for people to get a job that pays well. Inflation is super high. going on a date can cost upwards of $200. There was
cha-ching.
New York Times reporting found that young people were spending like hundreds of dollars to go on a date. And if you are going on a bunch of first dates with people, that's pretty expensive.
And you don't even know if you like them yet.
Exactly. You're putting down a down payment on someone you don't even know. And then we, I think, still have pretty rigid gender norms. I think women still expect a man will ask them out, will take them on a date, will pay for that date. And what we sort of expect out of partners is still very traditional in a sense. And I think it could be hard for people to sort of step out of that to maybe, you know, look beyond sort of what someone makes, how they look, how tall they are.
Yeah. So interesting, Allie. And so, Lauren, you're a matchmaker. Mm-hmm. Before we get into it, I want you to explain what that is, because a lot of people may not have met someone who does the work, who is in the type of line of work that you are in. So explain what a matchmaker does.
I often tell people what I do and they're like, that's a thing. Yeah, much like Hitch, I heard one of the lead-in commercials, mm-hmm. you mentioned that I set people up. People come to us for all different types of reasons, looking for all different types of people. And my part, we're really, the company I work for is a whole service agency, but my part is the actual matching. We also do coaching and we do photos and help them get ready. But my piece is the connection piece, getting mm-hmm. to know my client, seeing what's out there, comparing that to what they expect.
And we'll talk about mm-hmm. people's expectations versus what the reality is. So you heard what Allie had to say about the stats and the numbers and all that. Is that what you're seeing on the ground with the people who are coming to you? Like, who are the people who are like, look, I've been out there and I need help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Allie was spot on with everything. There's so many reasons why people are not dating, why they're having trouble dating, deciding just to give up. There's all kinds of people out there, but people come. Matchmakers used to be much more taboo. Mm-hmm. We used to deal with a lot of businessmen that are very busy and are outsourcing their dating, like a personal trainer or an assistant at work. It was a lot of divorced women that haven't been on a date in 30 years. Now it's people that are 27, don't even know where to start, don't want to go on the
apps. That's your prime years of dating.
Right? Yeah. They don't even know what to do. So we are getting a lot of people now saying, where do I find people?
Yeah. And so so people don't even know where to go. It's like, what happened to going to a bar or like, you know, at a club or I hate to say it, or work?
Yeah. I think, data has shown like younger people are drinking less. So if you're not going to a bar to meet people, you know, that's kind of exclusionary. I mean, just the cost of maybe going to a bar is exclusionary for people. I think people have a lot of anxiety and they're afraid to approach people as well. So like, you know, you might be in these spaces, but like you're only going to talk to your friends because you don't want to come off as creepy or like overstepping a line. You know, I think it's really good to be mindful about how you are coming across to people. But after a certain point, like you have to be a little bit vulnerable. I think if you're not like harassing somebody, you know, you should feel comfortable talking to people. But there's just a lot of anxiety among people. They don't want to be rejected. They don't want to be seen looking stupid. And I totally understand that. We live in a culture where everybody has their phones and they're recording everything. And so I think people, rightly so, are very concerned with their self-image. They don't want to, you know, appear online as like a meme or as someone who is like creepy or harassing other people.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I know, Lauren, you actually help people get their self together, build their confidence. What are some of the things, that people come to you for that you're like, oh yeah, we need to talk through this?
Yeah, and I think it's really hard for men, especially right now, in a time where there are so many women that are feminists and independent and strong and, you know, have their careers and have everything, or just looking for a partner. It's intimidating for a man even to hold a door open sometimes for a woman because we have become so strong. Yet most of us would like the door opened for us, right?
Yeah.
So there's a fine balance. And I think I do see a lot of younger men especially, and divorced men that are fresh to the dating scene, you know, haven't dated since they were in their 20s. They don't know how to properly approach a woman, not because of a lack of confidence, because they don't know what they're going to be meeting on the other end. So it's it's really interesting to, yeah. you know, so I do, I run through a lot of scenarios sometimes with my clients. If this happens, we can do this, or, you know, give them a lot of dating advice, help them with yeah. how to dress.
And I think about the Me Too movement, Allie, because I have a nephew who's 21, and he said that he was nervous about, you know, approaching a young woman. And he just said, you know, I don't want her to feel like I'm doing something wrong or to accuse me of something. Do you hear that a lot? And how did the Me Too movement sort of shift the way men approach women, anyone approaching women, right? Or anybody approaching anybody, because mm-hmm. it's not just women, right? Because mm-hmm. men could feel, assaulted in some way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Me Too movement really opened up the door for people to call out bad behavior. And I think that is great. And, you know, it really empowered people to be like, this is not okay. We need to talk about it. As a result, and I've heard this from, you know, a number of sources, particularly experts who work with men or coach men, they have heard from, you know, the people that they work with that as a result, it's made men a little bit self-conscious of like, I don't want to be accused as harassing somebody. And therefore, you know, they kind of stick to themselves. And I think there's a fine line, right? Like, I don't think men should be going up and harassing women in bars. And I think women should be able to advocate for themselves and call out that behavior. But at a certain point, we might need to have a little bit of grace for people to understand that, like, it takes a lot of courage to approach somebody.
Oh, yeah.
And to assume the best. You know, there are certainly bad actors out there. But I think if we assume the best in one another of like, not even that this person is trying to hit on me, that like this person's just trying to have a human connection. And like, maybe I should hear them out.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, I was a teenager in the 90s, 20s and the early 2000s. And I think about how many bad pickup lines were practiced on me during those years, yeah. like really bad. And I'm like, and you laugh it off and you see that they're trying, right? But you don't really get upset. You just take it as that was an air ball, honey. That did not work. Yeah. That did not land. But now, you know, there's more pressure to land and you may not. By the way, we want to open up the phone lines for those of you who'd like to comment on today's topic. Our question of the day: are you or people you know finding it harder to date these days? If so, what is the issue that you're seeing? Is it money? Is it the apps, finding people you're actually attracted to? Or is it something else? Maybe commitment. No one wants to commit anymore. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And our Facebook and YouTubers, you can leave a comment on the live chat. Penny says, I'm a 75-year-old woman who learned recently that my 39-year-old son is trying to find a new girl and he's still expected to pay on dates. I was shocked to learn that this is still a thing. I realized that generally men earn more than women do, but not always. Even when I was in school back in the dark ages, I didn't expect men to pay for me. Andrew is on the line. He's from Germantown. Andrew, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I just wanted to say that I'm happily in a relationship. I'm 32.
Congratulations. Yes.
Oh, thank you. But I am helping my friend with her dating life, and I have to say it's really just awful. She's 26, and I'm actually in control of her dating profile because she's so burnt out of the dating game, so I'm trying to help her out, and I'm on her profile. And it really is bad. And I can say, you know, for women especially, I think it's even worse on these apps because it just feels like every interaction is very cheap, very, you know. And so I can see why it's hard because it's almost hit and run on these apps nowadays. And I'm trying my best for my friend. But, I, you know, just as she's getting burnt out, I feel myself losing a grasp on
wow. And Andrew, just quickly, and by the way, you're a good friend to take this labor on. Give us an example of when you say hit, they're just kind of, give us an example of an interaction so we can kind of like in our minds see I guess the very like superficiality of the interactions that she's experiencing.
Yeah, I guess I can say it's overwhelming, right? Like the kind of flood of messages and pings and notifications that was so, you know, I'm trying to field all these messages and you know, it's it's hard because you try to have energy inside the conversations and then they disappear for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, I thought, you know, this could have been somewhere. So
yeah,
that's one example.
Thank you. That's Andrew from Germantown taking on the labor of helping his friend meet somebody on the apps. You know, I know, Lauren, you're looking at me. You were like,
so
you
impressed.
Just nodding your head like, yes, go Andrew for taking this on. But it's talk about these apps because they are hard. People thought the apps would open the door. You have more options, but sometimes more options, not necessarily better, Lauren.
I always say too many options will kill a man. I think to Andrew's point about cheapening the conversation, there are so many people to talk to that if someone falls short or they don't respond in 12 minutes or when you're available or they say the wrong thing or you're bored, there's 15 other people waiting for you to respond to them. So you can just switch gears. If someone else catches your attention, you go 3 days without talking to someone, it's over. You'll never, they unmatch you. People have such a short attention span on the apps, and I think it's probably just because of our phones in general.
Yeah.
It's almost like people are disposable. They don't take each other seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are there because they want someone, but they know that it's not serious, so they act also as if.
It's very unserious. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of data and statistics about the burnout that is happening mm-hmm. on the apps. And you know, Tinder was like, what, 15 years old at this point? Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember sitting watching coworkers like, you know, swipe, swipe, swipe.
Yeah.
And everybody thought it would be great. But then it's not.
Yeah. I mean, Tinder really revolutionized dating, but it turned it into a game, right? You know, it's a numbers game. And so you know that there's always going to be another profile when you swipe. And I think that sort of like made it not serious for people. Like, okay, well, if this person doesn't work, there's always someone else. It gives people the false impression that they have an endless stream of options in front of them. And while that might be true, you need to be discerning about it. It's not so much like how many likes can you get. I've heard from people who are just like, oh yeah, I just swipe right on everybody and I message the people who have liked me back. And I think that's not quite a strategy because you're not thinking about, you know, how you would connect with this person or what they might bring to your life, what you would bring to their life. And yeah, to your point of burnout, there was a Forbes Health survey a couple of years ago that found 78% of respondents were burned out on dating apps. That's a majority of people. And yet, they still use them, you know, because it is easy. You don't have to leave your house to, you know, potentially find someone. You know, it really like lowers that barrier because it is hard to put yourself out there in a social environment. And like we mentioned, it's like scary. It's anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
You might offend somebody. So it is way easier to do it, even though people acknowledge like this is not it.
Yeah. Let's bring in another caller before we go to break. We have Mike calling from New Jersey. From a beach in New Jersey. All right, Mike, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, how you doing today?
Great.
My comment is I laugh because I wonder if what I did to meet my wife, you know, 24 or so years ago would have come off very differently today, you know, with the like, you know.
Tell us the story.
So the place where my wife worked was near my apartment. And so I would drive by again and again and again, and I would see her kind of going in and out of the establishment. And finally, I was like, I got to meet this person. Kind of turned into the parking lot. I go into the place. I make pretend I'm interested in what she was selling there. I'm grabbing like every pamphlet on the table, trying to make it look like I'm interested in the stuff. And I probably made a complete ass of myself, but I introduced myself. I said, thank you for your time. You know, I left. And later that day, I had a rose delivered to the place, you know, with my name. And I said, hey, this is Mike from earlier. If you'd be interested in meeting up at some point, you know, I'd be happy to do that, you know, that sort of thing. And she called. And,
wow.
You know, 24 years later, you know, two kids, you know, so today, if somebody did that, I just wonder if that would come off as overly intense or
yeah.
if they'd be scared away, you know. But it was like a simple old school thing, and it worked, and there was a connection, and you know.
And look at you now.
Kids.
Yeah, thank you. That's Mike from calling from a New Jersey beach. Your reaction to what Mike had to say, Lauren, and I mean that's an old school way of doing it, and maybe some today somebody would think that was kind of creepy that he sent her a rose, but clearly his wife fell for it and married him. Now they got two kids.
Mm-hmm. I think it probably also has a lot to do with if she was attracted to him.
He probably was. Yeah, he probably. Yeah, didn't ask that question. He probably
because,
was cute.
Yeah. If I mean, Mike's probably super cute and walked in, she's probably thinking about him already. And then, oh my gosh, that cute guy from earlier just sent me a rose. But if she wasn't attracted to him back then or now, it would have been seen as like, oh God, oh, now what do I do? You know, it wouldn't have been received as well. But I think the same goes for then as now.
Yeah.
I would be complete. If I was into someone and that happened, I would be on a date with him that night. But
yeah.
If I wasn't, I would be strategizing how I let him down gently.
And but Mike was, he was so brave to shoot his shot,
yeah,
though. And a lot of people don't even shoot their shot.
Right, exactly. Like, I loved that story. But yeah, like to Lauren's point that, like, it is all so highly individualized. Like, yeah, like if you didn't like that person, that probably would have come across as creepy. But I don't think that should deter people from doing it. Like people need to, you know, put themselves out there a little bit if this is what they say they want. Like you can't let the fear of striking out keep you from sending the rose.
And yeah. So I love that. And so on the other half of this break, we're going to hear from a man who helps other men glow up. But we'll also get advice because we're not going to be scared off by this recession. People want love, and by goodness, we're going to help them get it. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back. This is Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg. Today, we're talking about modern challenges facing single Americans. And before we return to our guests, I want to bring in a Canadian who has been called the real life Hitch. And some of you might remember Will Smith's iconic role as a date doctor for awkward but well-intentioned men just trying to be noticed. And Michael Ucibuo has worked with over 100 men to help them put their best foot forward in the dating world. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. How are you doing today?
I am great. And for our callers, by the way, you can tell us, are you or someone you know finding it harder to date these days? And tell us what the issue is. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our YouTube and Facebookers, you can leave your comments in the chat. And so, Michael, we have spent several minutes talking about how hard dating has become. And you work specifically with men. I want you to, from a male perspective, tell us what women are not understanding about what dating feels like for men right now.
Yeah, so I feel like for a lot of men, or especially the men I work with, being doctor, founders, executive, and people at really high career job titles, the frustrations for them is that they don't feel seen on dating apps or in person or wherever they're trying to date. So for them, it's just a lack of visibility, and that's what I help them work through.
Yeah. And so you talk about your high achieving, high earning clients. They can walk confidently, clearly into a boardroom, into an operating room, do their thing. What are some of the issues that they're having meeting the right person?
Yeah. So for them, it's really their appearance. So I always tell people that, or the clients I work with, why they're feeling invisible is because their career success doesn't match their dating success because of lack of appearance and the lack of intentionality with how they're presenting themselves, whether it's on online dating or whether they're meeting people in person. It's just there's not that same emphasis or focus.
Well, most women I talk to say they just want somebody normal and they're not like necessarily looking at appearances like on that level. So I want to challenge you and push you. I mean, isn't that a little superficial? Because I know a lot of women who don't necessarily focus on appearance, but you're saying that is not the case from the male perspective.
Of course. And if for women that are using the apps, they get bombarded with thousands of likes and options. So they don't really get to see what's underlying with their personality or emotional intelligence. So appearance is always going to come first. And if people or men don't know how to put their best foot forward, these great men who are what they're ideally looking for are going to get buried behind because of the amount of attention that women are getting on the apps, where they're not able to find those compatibility partners.
Yeah. And so what do the dating apps and this lack of visibility do to the confidence of a man?
Yeah, it just makes them want to give up. They really feel like they're behind. They were told that, you know, if they get the amazing job and get financial stability, buy the house by 30 to 35 to even 40, that they should then have an easier time finding their ideal partner. So for them, when they realize that they have friends or family that are getting married, have kids, and they're not having that same success, it really makes them feel invisible or get into depression because they don't know where they're going wrong with it.
And you said changing the exterior changes the interior. How so?
Yeah, so I always tell people when you put that same level of intention to not so much of just appearance, but really through like this means of being fit, and you can tell and look at a person that's fit, they took time and effort to put into that. So the more effort you're putting into yourself within your fitness, and then obviously how you're styling yourself with whatever room you're going to be in, it helps greatly with feeling more confident within yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, and I want to get your reaction to what Michael is saying, Lauren and Allie, because, you know, confidence matters. Are you seeing that, Lauren, specifically, like that women, I mean, they do kind of go for the guy who has the looks. I mean,
kind of.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So Michael's not wrong here.
He is not wrong. When you were challenging him, I was like, I will challenge you.
Okay.
especially with what I do, I'm talking to my clients. I met this great guy for you. I'm telling them all the great things. And then I'm going to send you his photos and a little bio, but I talk first. And they're like, he sounds phenomenal. Okay. But he's 5'8".
Mm.
Do you know how many times that, nope, sorry, I won't date anyone unless he's 5'10". I'm like, but Carol, you're 5'2". Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Women, they'll say, well, I want to feel safe.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a lot of stuff is very superficial. So if you don't, as a man, have those extra inches on height, it is beneficial to look good.
Yeah. And so how do you sort of, Michael, you hear that Lauren is co-signing everything you're saying here. So how do you sort of build these men up? If you wanted to give me a summary of the type of services you provide and the outcomes, does it actually work?
Yeah, of course. So I always tell everyone it has to start with just your fitness, because that's the first thing we all judge people without realizing, with just the amount of effort someone's putting into themselves. And after you can tell that someone's taking care of themselves or have that discipline, then you go to your grooming, your haircut.
So get in shape first. You get them in shape first.
Get in shape first. Get in shape first and stay in shape. Not just, don't get in shape just for dating. Like, get in shape for yourself. And then once you're in shape, or once you see that you have that work ethic, now how do you want to present yourself? How do you want to style yourself? That's what we take care of, with finding the right hairstyle that works for their frame or their ethnicity or culture. And then, of course, how you style yourself and how you present yourself, whether it's for photos, whether it's when you're going on a date, all of that blends into each other. And that's how they're able to elevate their appearance, where then they can then use their communication style, emotional intelligence, to bridge and foster relationships.
And it's been working. They get more hits on the apps once they change the photos. Because I looked at some of these photos. I mean, he has the men looking, you know, at a dinner table, at a fancy restaurant, holding a bottle of champagne. And so the woman seeing that, or the man, I don't know how people go, see themselves sitting mm-hmm. across from this person. And they're like, oh, hey, I could be the one drinking that champagne. So that whole photo shoot sort of changes their whole imagery on the apps, and they get more hits. That's the argument.
Yes. Yeah. And it's really just showcasing your future partner what it's going to be like to be a part of your world, right? So what it's going to be like to be on a date, or to treat a woman to a nice date and show that you're able to put effort. It's not to say that every single date needs to be dinner or something fancy, but just that you could do that and
yeah.
show that you're willing to make that effort is what really matters for
yeah.
a lot of women.
Well,
it should.
Well, Michael, I got to say one more thing before I let you go. You do this work helping people become partnered, but you're single.
I am dating. I am single, but I am dating. I'm taking my time with it, as you can say. To
yeah.
Find
so
the,
I was like
partner.
Thinking like Lauren's like, hey, if you need services, you know. Right there. But Michael, I want to say thank you so much for being on Studio 2. That's Michael Cibuo right here. He provides services for men. If you want to tell people where they can find you online, you can do that right now.
Yeah, if you just search up my name, you guys can find me on any sort of social media platform, Michael Cibuo.
Thank you so much for your time. And so I want to get your reaction, Ali, to Michael's services and just sort of just what men are feeling in this dating game and the fact that, you know what, they're on the apps, they're getting ignored, and women do care about looks. Mm-hmm. We learned that today.
Yeah. But I mean, I would slightly challenge that, you know, you know, in reporting that I've done, there's a lot of studies that show that, you know, women want a man who's a provider, who makes them, to your point, feel safe. And men just want someone hot. So I don't, it goes both ways. You know, in research, when people say what they are looking for, like, I think women tend to look for more like inner qualities. Like, yes, the height is very important. Like, how much they make is important. But like, for men, it is even more important. They just want someone who's hot.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
I, if any men want to call and talk about this, 888-477-9499, the email studio2@whyy.org. By the way, let me reintroduce my main guest this hour. We have Lauren Daddis, a Philadelphia-based matchmaker at 3-Day Rule. And that was just the voice of Ali Volpe, correspondent at Vox, who writes about relationships and fostering connections. Let me read a couple comments in before we get some advice for our folks. Dr. Sib on Facebook says, the good guys are tired of being rejected and often wait for a sign or a signal from the woman. You both are nodding. Yes, a lot of guys are waiting back. Ashley on Facebook says dating is hard because too many people aren't being honest about their intentions, and these social media men hate women, women hate men podcasts are harming us in real life. And also Mike says, I'm a 45-year-old guy, never married, haven't been the type to flirt with women at bars, so the apps are a natural fit. Many times I think the first date went well, only to not land a second date. I think we have the paradox of choice scenario where men and women aren't giving chemistry a little time to develop. And so this is, I want to transition like to advice and sort of like how you sort of structure things, because the idea, and I've told some of my single friends, a lot of people will cut someone on the first date. And a lot of times you don't know whether or not you like them on the first date. You're getting the representative. Lauren, do you encourage your clients to go past that first date just to see? Yeah. And get to know the person a little bit?
I think a lot of people are looking for fireworks and chemistry and an instant connection on the first date. But essentially, you're just sitting down to see like how your nervous system reacts to this person. And you don't know what kind of day they had, what kind of energy they're bringing in, their pheromones and your pheromones. It's completely out of your control. There's so many things at play on that first date. There's so much that goes into it on both sides. If it's not a hard no, I always tell my clients, if there's just something there that you're interested in learning more about them, go again. Even if you're not excited, because sometimes those fireworks are not healthy. Yeah. A lot of times that chemistry that people are looking for, you know, wanting to like make out passionately on the first date, that's not a necessarily healthy standpoint to start a relationship from.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people, especially with app culture, say, okay, well, I didn't feel it. Maybe I'll just try someone new.
Yeah, and that's not the way to do it.
No.
And so I guess I should take a step back. So what is advice for where to meet people? So if you decided, you know what, Ali, I'm sick of the apps. And maybe, Lauren, I know you say hire a matchmaker, but you're sick of the apps. And you're like, what are some of the, you know, if somebody's sitting at home on their couch right now, they haven't had a date in months, maybe a year, maybe two. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to change. It's cuffing season. It's about to get cold. I want to try this thing. So, and they don't want to do the apps. What is your advice?
Yeah. I mean, this sounds counterintuitive, but I would almost take romance out of it. You know, where do you want to go to just meet people?
And meet people.
Yeah. And it has to just be somewhere you would enjoy going, because that's the whole point. If you're signing up for a sewing class and you have no interest in sewing, you're probably not going to continue going and finding someone who's like-minded. Similarly, you're not going to join a run club if you hate running, and like you're not going to meet people. So like find an activity, a club, something that you genuinely would enjoy doing, And the regularity of going to those events, seeing people week after week or day after day, takes some of that pressure off, some of that anxiety off. Because, you know, like,
yeah,
this, I'm a safe person. You know, like, if I'm talking to you, you're going to see me next week at the running club, and I'm not dangerous to you.
Yeah, I'm not going to see you as a creep. Your advice there, same thing?
Yeah. I tell my clients the same thing. Go continue to be yourself and do things that you enjoy doing, because you're going to find like-minded people. They might not be single, but they might have a friend. You know, you might make a friend at this run club if you're a runner that has a single girlfriend, you know, or has a single colleague or something. The more people you meet, the more people you're going to have access to.
And so, and then sort of making that first approach, advice on that. So you got to go to a place where you can meet people. And let's say you see, you know, someone, a person that you think is attractive or not attractive or whatever that you're interested in. How do you sort of make an approach without coming across as a creep, Lauren?
Well, I think just the fact that you're both at this event together, you already have some common ground. So talk about what you guys are doing. You know, like, what do you, how do you, I'm so not a runner, but how do you feel about the run today? I would be like, I don't know why I'm here. But, you know,
so
like,
you can just start a conversation.
Start a conversation because you're already somewhere that you like being. You want to be there. You're both there on your own accord. You know, no one's twisting your arm. You enjoy the activity. Talk about that. You already know you have one thing in common.
Yeah. And so you can just introduce, hi, I'm so-and-so, right? Yes. Like, that could be pretty simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. There's really good research that shows exactly that. Like, if you go up to somebody and make an observation about something, again, like, try to avoid anything about, like, how they look. Like, it could be about a t-shirt. Like, say you see someone wearing a Taylor Swift t-shirt and you also like Taylor Swift.
Boom.
You know,
starting a conversation just like that. Okay. Let's bring in a caller. We have John from Philly on the line who responded about the attractiveness stuff. So let's hear from John. John, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, yeah. Thanks for having me on. So my comment was actually for earlier when you guys had another caller in who said that he met his wife by bringing in a rose and then they end up getting married after that. And the comments, I think, after that were focused around, like, you know, it depends, because if the person was attractive, that could be someone that you'd be setting up a date with that night, whereas if they weren't, then that could be considered creepy. And I think that's actually a really true sentiment that a lot of people have, and I think that a lot of men know that. And so because they know that, hey, this is like the public perspective of if you're going to approach someone you've never met before, if you're not what they consider to be attractive, then you're going to be considered a creep. And so a lot of men just don't approach women anymore.
Thank you, John from Philly. That is a good point, because there is like this pretty privilege, right? Guys who people would universally think of as hot get away with all kinds of probably sometimes borderline inappropriate behavior, mm-hmm. whereas a man who may not have that more, he may be more a little bit more distinguished mm-hmm. or, you know, a more acquired taste, right, may not be able to get away with that. And so how do you sort of get around that, Lauren?
There's a difference between, I did think after I said it, I was like, ooh, I don't know how that's going to land. There's a difference between attractive and attracted.
Oh, okay.
Because,
yeah,
yes,
true.
There's a quintessential, and this is what, when I have a client that says, you know, I want a handsome man. I'm like, well, I know what the quintessential tall, dark, and handsome man looks like, right? But what are you attracted to? Because men, we're not looking for someone that's attractive. We're looking for someone that we are attracted to.
Yeah.
So it's very individual. So don't get scared, because you don't know, you have no idea what this woman is attracted to.
Yeah.
Of course, all the men think the hot woman is hot, and all the women think that the handsome man is handsome, but that might not be. I don't like tall, dark, and handsome.
Some people love a short king.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
So you don't know. Don't let it stop you, because you don't know what she's attracted to. Even if you don't think you're attractive,
Shoot your shot. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk quickly. We only have a couple more minutes in the show. And so I got to talk about the first date and the money part, because I understand that usually there's a test. You know, do you pay? Do you not pay? Do you have to go to dinner? Can you do something cheaper to avoid this $200? So give your advice on how to sort of get to that first date without dropping $200.
Mm-hmm.
And Allie, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I would say dinner drinks does not have to be the default. You know, maybe you go get coffee, you go for a walk, you have a little picnic or something, bring some cheese. It does not need to be over the top.
Go
it does not.
Picnic, yeah.
Yeah, like it could be like cute and thoughtful. I think people are looking for something thoughtful as opposed to like this needs to be very expensive. And if you do, like there's, again, nothing wrong with doing like the traditional dinner drinks. I think, you know, people should make a best effort to split it because things are so expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. And your thoughts, do you have to pay? Like, who should pay on that first date?
I have male clients and female clients. I always tell the man, because I ask the man, we're still a little old school at my company. We ask the man to plan the date, but I always say, please do not do dinner. It's too much pressure for both of you. It leaves the woman sitting at a table with a man she's never met for 2 hours, and it leaves the man doing the same, and he probably has to pay for it if she doesn't offer.
Yeah.
It's a lot of pressure for both people. So I say drinks or something just short and sweet.
Yeah, and we got to wrap up. Quick question. Do you each still have hope that these... that folks will find love even with the recession?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I do.
Keep looking and don't get down in the dumps and don't stop.
Thank you very much. I want to say thank you so much to Lauren Daddis, Philadelphia-based matchmaker at the 3-Day Rule. And thank you to Ali Volpe, correspondent at Vox, who writes about relationships and fostering connections. Ali, Lauren, you were great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And now it is time to reveal our DJ of the Day song selection. So, Al, I'm going to say it. Hit it.
What do you get when you fall in love? A guy with a pen to thirst your bubble. That's what you get for all your trouble. I never fall in love again.
Hey. All right. That's I'll Never Fall in Love Again by Dionne Warwick from 1970. I was hoping for something a little more hopeful than that, but we still have hope. And thank you to David from Glenside for choosing that song and being our DJ of the day. And listener Frank, we see you. You were close this week. Keep trying because we're going to get you. But you know what? We're going to still send people wishes of love. And by the way, I got to say thank you so much to our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for listening.
Do you get when you fall in love? You only get love.